Good morning, everyone. It is Friday, March 2nd, 2018, and you are listening to a new episode of the Packers Podcast. My name is Michael Cohen, and I'm here with fellow beat reporter Tom Silverstein. Tom, you are in Indianapolis at the NFL Scouting Combine. You've been following all that's going on with the Packers and Brian Gutekunst and Mike McCarthy and all the hoopla that pretty much surrounds the beginning of the new NFL year. I know you missed it. Is it nice to be back, Tom?
Oh, it's terrific.
Yep, it's back. You know, this is, I used to say that the new season doesn't start until the old season ends. And so, you know, this is it. New season has started because the old one has ended. So on to the next year.
When do you think was the first time you went to the combine?
Probably in the mid-90s at some point. I didn't go every year, but I went back when it was a much smaller event, when you spent a lot of time tracking guys down in the hallways, and they didn't have as many formal interviews. They didn't bring out all the players. They only brought out a few players. It was a way different deal.
When did it really start to explode? Was it pretty recently, like within the last 5 to 10 years, you'd say?
Probably 10 years, maybe a little bit more than that. My ability to tell the difference between, you know, 15 years ago and this year is really kind of diminishing as I get older. But I got to think that, you know, it is over the last 10 or 15 years that it just exploded.
And it's become a zoo. I was there the last 2 years, and this year I'll be at the owners' meetings next month instead. But, I mean, there's like 1,000 reporters, literally 1,000 reporters that they let in there. And it's a pretty frantic scene. But it all kicked off on Wednesday of this week when new GM Brian Gutekunst and Mike McCarthy met with the press for the first time. This was really the first time that Gutekunst had been in a real public setting since his introductory press conference at Lambeau Field in January. And I guess just from a personality or an optic standpoint, how do you think he sort of acts in front of the media now that we've gotten to see him a couple times? He strikes me as a pretty cool customer.
Yeah, he definitely is comfortable in his own skin. I don't think he's really intimidated by it, but I do think he it's a new animal to him, because, you know, there's nothing like being quoted, you know, and your comments being splashed all over the public. And so I think that's a little different. You're always a little careful with what you say, and it takes time to become really comfortable, unless you're just a really super ultra confident person. I think he's confident. I think he's comfortable, but I think he's playing it cautiously to start. I think he's trying to get off on the right foot. He's trying to be more open than Ted was. So I give him some credit for that. And we'll just see how it goes. It'll be a process.
One of the things that I've noticed, and, you know, obviously I was at the introductory press conference in January, and then I had a chance to speak with him one-on-one a couple times down at the Senior Bowl. And it was really funny, because listening to him for the third time at the Combine, he has really developed these stock phrases and things that he's able to go to for questions that, you know, him and you know, Jason Wallers of the PR staff are able to anticipate. And I don't even mean, you know, questions that are negative. I just mean the obvious topics. And so, you know, there was a couple phrases that he's used multiple times. The idea of, and we'll talk about this more later, but he's said a few times now the idea that they want to be in on every conversation with free agency. That's one of his stock quotes now. And you know, some of the other ones with, you know, the veteran players, you don't want to let good players walk out the door. All these phrases he's repeated 2-3 times now. And that, to me, sort of speaks to the cautious element a little bit, just that, you know, he's prepared for the questions that he knows are coming, and he has the way that he wants to answer them so that he doesn't say anything that will that he'll regret or will be taken out of context.
Yeah, well, there's a lot of things that are in flux at this point.
Yes.
If they had made decisions on some of the guys they were going to cut, some of the guys they weren't going to re-sign, I think they would have made those decisions already. I mean, now is the time to do it. If you're going to start cutting guys or whatever, you might as well do it now. I don't think those decisions have been made, and I think their philosophy or their operation is going to be to sort of work this as it comes. When they need money, they'll cut somebody or restructure a contract. I think they don't want to just cut guys for cutting guys. I think they want to do it as it becomes necessary. And maybe by doing it that way, they'll avoid, anything unnecessary. But really, you can't ex it would be rare for him to, and actually pretty dumb for him to go out and let everybody know what he was going to do
Oh,
and tell
absolutely.
everybody that, Jordy Nelson's washed up and, they're gonna force a pay cut or, it would be nice if you could hear that kind of stuff, but yeah, it's not gonna happen.
And so you talked about the idea that the Packers will face some of these things head on when they're, right in front of them, and obviously a big, catalyst in terms of forcing them to consider these things is the impending extension of quarterback Aaron Rodgers, whenever that happens between now and the start of next season. That was one of the topics that you wrote about, and one that Gutekunst has been asked about a couple times now. First of all, what was sort of the update that he provided, or just his response in terms of those questions? And then second of all, what were you able to sort of figure out in terms of how this could influence the roster over the next month or two, even as we get into free agency and then the draft?
Well, they at least acknowledge that they want to get this done this off season. And I don't think that was a big secret, but they hadn't publicly acknowledged that, and they Gutekunst did that it was a priority to get it done. And so that is going to get done. That is just a piece of business that will get done. It's no different than when the Lions got Matthew Stafford done, and it'll be no different when Atlanta does Matt Ryan. I mean, it's just the price of doing business. You have to pay your quarterback, and you have to keep his salary up to date. And so Rodgers will get, a mega deal, and it'll be splashed as, 5 years and $100 trillion and all that kind of stuff. What the Packers have to decide is how they're going to structure it and how much cap space they want to use this year on it. They could conceivably structure the deal so that it does not increase Rodgers' cap number. That's actually easily done. The higher you give guaranteed money, the easier that becomes. But I don't think they want to completely kick that can down the road. I think they want to, take a little bit of a bite out of the prorated money in the future. So it's just about how much they're going to do. And I think we'll know more about that come probably April. I mean, that's when I would guess, I would guess they'll go through free agency and probably before the draft and try to get the Rodgers deal done. They know what it's going to come in at. Vaguely, they know what it's going to come in at. And so I think they've done all kinds of, figured out all kinds of scenarios to, as to how this will impact their cap.
So one of the questions that I've gotten a bunch from people on Twitter, and I'll pose it to you now, is, why wouldn't they want to get this done very, very quickly, like before the start of free agency? In other words, if their goal is to get it done by the start of next season at the very latest, wouldn't it behoove them to try and get it done before free agency starts, simply because, like you said, the Packers know generally what it's going to cost, but they don't necessarily know what Rodgers and his agent David Dunn
Yeah,
will agree to.
they're going to wait till Kirk Cousins gets his deal done. You know, they're not
Interesting.
they have to see what that comes in at, and their deal has to come in higher than what Kirk Cousins signs. And we don't even know if Kirk Cousins will top Stafford or Garoppolo. But there's no sense in doing a deal and then all of a sudden Kirk Cousins beats it. I mean, I
True.
think, I think they just, the idea is spend some time negotiating it, figure out what the landscape's going to be, figure out what the cap is going to be this year, and then go ahead and get it done. I really don't think it's that complicated, and I think they probably could get it done fairly quickly. But it may just be a situation where Russ Ball is leaving himself some outs in case there's some free agent that they really want, and then he wants to structure Rodgers' deal in a different way. Because once you do it, you can't restructure it in the first year. So if they decide to take a nice chunk of use a nice chunk of cap room this year, and then all of a sudden, there's some guy who becomes a free agent that they really want, and then all of a sudden they got to start cutting it in other places. So I think it makes sense to kind of slow play it a little bit.
So Rodgers has made no secret about his desire to play, to at least 40, if not into his 40s. And he's 34 right now after having his 34th birthday in December. Do you have any sense of whether or not this contract will eat up most of that distance between 34 and 40? Like, will they try and go 5, 6 years, or will it be, I've seen people throw out the idea of just a maximum loaded 3-year deal and then do it all again in 3 years. Do you have any sense how long they might want to try and go with this?
Well, in actuality, all deals are 3 years now. They may say 5 years, but the way everything is structured now is it's a 3-year plan. And so you look at all the money when you start looking at a deal, you pretty much count how much is being paid in the first 3 years. Because after 3 years, then the proration doesn't, if you're going to cut a guy, it doesn't devastate your cap quite as much as it would, if you did it at an earlier time. So they can do it for 12 years. They could do it for 20 years. I mean, you can only, I believe you can only prorate up to, it used to be up to 7 years. I think it's less than that now. And that's the whole idea is that, you add more years so that you can split up the salary cap numbers. You can prorate them over a course of more years, and then the cap number is spread out a little bit more. So I think basically what it'll be is probably Rodgers will either have 5 years left or 7 years left on the deal. Maybe it'll end up being six. But really, regardless, it's going to be a 3-year extension, and that new money will be the money to watch will be the over the 3 years of the first 3 years of that extension.
So you wrote a column, after the very first day, talking about the Rodgers situation and other players it might influence or other long-term roster decisions. We touched a little bit on, this particular round of free agency and why it would benefit them to hold off because they do have, some more flexibility that way if they want to go and get someone, as you mentioned. But in terms of the guys that are on the team, the three biggest names that everybody discusses in terms of contract are Randall Cobb, whose base salary this year will be $8.6 million with a cap hit of $12.7 million; Jordy Nelson, whose base salary is $9.2 million with a cap hit of $12.5 million; and Clay Matthews, whose base salary is $10.4 million with a cap hit of $11.4 million. You mentioned them in your column as well, just in terms of how their situation or just the concept of veteran players in general can be influenced by such a massive deal. And so, what is the important thing for people to realize when it comes to what what the Packers need to do with whatever the remaining percentage of the cap is. In other words, Rodgers, like you said, it's inevitable he's going to eat up a big amount, just like Stafford did and Garoppolo did. But what are the key things to keep in mind in terms of massaging whatever piece of the pie is left?
Well, I think the big decision will be with Nelson and what they're going to do there. I think ultimately, even though they did speak publicly very highly of him and defended his performance, I think, the one caveat I put in that story is that as soon as they need some room for something, he's going to be a guy they go to. And so I think he's very high on the list of people who will be asked for a pay cut or could be released outright. As far as the others, I don't think they would release Randall Cobb, and I don't think they'd get him to take a pay cut. I just don't think that's in the cards, and I think they're going to have to eat his deal this year and play. I mean, he can still be a productive player. He's still young. He still has some juice left in his legs. And that's the difference between him and Jordy Nelson, is that Jordy Nelson, it appears, doesn't have much juice left. So I wouldn't expect much from Cobb. I would say with Matthews, they might wind up extending him. And they could do that, and that would lower his cap number. They could gain some room there. They could cut, some people I didn't mention in there. They could cut Brian Bulaga. That would save them a significant amount of cap space.
And he
And
probably won't
then
be ready for the start of the regular season anyway.
might not be. And even if he is, they could wind up re-signing him at a later date. But they're going to have to make decisions on a few of those guys. The problem is they don't really have a lot of fat to cut. I mean, unless a lot of their guys are newly signed, and Daniels and Bakhtiari and Davante Adams. Those are guys who there's obviously you're not going to do any price slashing there. So they'll have to find some creative ways to find some cap room, or they're just going to have to be conservative during free agency. And I think ultimately that's what will happen. I think they'll do some, they'll re-sign it. A few of their guys that are free agents, and they'll, look at free agency, and more than likely they'll look for bargains. I think that's the position they're in. I don't think we're going to see more than a mid-range free agent added.
You know, one of the things that was sort of interesting last season at this time was, you know, what they were going to do with Nick Perry and how that outside linebacker market or pass rusher market more broadly was going to shape up. And then as it turned out, a lot of teams used the franchise tag on some of their best rushers. And so, you know, there became a point in time where Nick Perry was arguably the most coveted or most accomplished pass rusher left out there in terms of who was going to warrant the largest contract. And, you know, I just wonder, I think in the moment, they probably did what they had to do in terms of Thompson and Russ Ball giving Perry that deal. But if this is yet another season where he struggles to stay healthy and in 2018, you know, that is a contract that I wonder, you know, if that will come back to bite them at all. Even if it's a small bite, I just wonder if it'll cause any problems because his cap hit this year is 10.8 million.
Yeah, it could. The thing about Nick Perry is that he's still a good player.
Agreed.
He's a really good player, and they don't have anybody like him on the roster. They don't have a pass rushing guy with that much power who can also play the run.
Yeah, he's the best
And
they have against the run.
yeah, and so it. Yes, they absolutely need him to stay healthy, and they have to figure out whether that's playing him fewer snaps or whether that's finding a role where he's not He seems to his injury seems to be with contact, with every time, he uses his hands so much, he's had hand injuries. They have to figure out somehow how to put him, in positions where he's not getting hurt as much. But that may not just be, the way he plays. It may just be how it is. But they got it. You're right. They do need to get him healthy, and he needs to play a full season. But I don't think they're at a point right now where they can afford to just throw him overboard,
No,
or
definitely not.
even, he's not going to take a pay cut. He would force them to cut him. So, you can. That's the one thing people have to remember is you can ask anybody for a pay cut, but you better be ready to cut him because, they're going to say no. And when they say no, then you have to decide, okay, well, am I going to just back off or am I going to cut them? And once you ask for a pay cut, you tick a guy off. And so there's a lot of things that go into that.
So this is a situation now over the next, well, I mean, at the combine now, all kinds of discussions are taking place between teams and their own free agents and all kinds of discussions between teams and other free agents, which aren't supposed to happen, but definitely do happen. And then soon enough, free agency will be here, in the second week of March. And so you touched briefly on the idea that the Packers, may not have enough financial flexibility to go after a giant fish, or even if they have the flexibility, it just might not be the most prudent thing to do. And so, one of the things that jumped out to me about what Gutekunst said was just sort of the way they're preparing for free agency this year. And so what did you kind of take away from his comments there in terms of how they're getting ready for March 12th?
Well, I think the biggest difference is that they're actually preparing for free agency. From what Gutekunst was saying, is they've gone through scores of scenarios where they th throw their hat in on a guy, and somehow it winds up that they're the leaders, and then they have to figure out how to get, the finances together to make sure that they can afford them. So I think what you'll see and what he says, at least if he's a man of his word, they will call agents and just say, hey, what's the going rate here? And what do we need to be in the hunt for the guy? And then when they're told if it's too much, then they'll back out. And I think we may see them, as finalists for a number of guys, but in the end, every time they make a move like that, then there's a reaction, and that is that they've got to clear some cap room. So they're just not that deep in cap space that they can go ahead and sign three or four guys and not have to worry about it. So I think what they've done is they've gone over all the free agents. I think they've, as they always do, they predict who they think will be cut for salary cap reasons or other reasons, and they look for bargains. They look for guys that they liked. Maybe they like coming out of the draft. Maybe they're guys who've played against them and they really like, or just guys they've always thought well about. And that comes with, having a good personnel department and having meetings. So I think the big difference is they're just having discussions about it, as opposed to when Ted was general manager, I don't think they even met about free agency.
And so, behind the scenes, while Gutekunst is obviously out in front and the public face of all this, this is a stretch of time where Russ Ball probably makes a lot of his money in terms of what he brings to the table, because all the manipulations of the salary cap, all of the structural possibilities and sort of finaglings, that's a lot of what falls on his plate in terms of coming up with those scenarios or being creative or finding ways to do that. And so again, that sort of, calls into question, not calls into question, but just sort of reiterates why Gutekunst and why Mark Murphy wanted to make sure that that Russ Ball stuck around when all of the change was happening in January, because there certainly are plenty of cap guys around the league that are capable and qualified, and I'm sure they would have gotten one if Russ Ball had left. But you know, just that familiarity with the agents and the team and all the contracts with the Packers, I think it's going to be pretty important for them as they move through a time where they try and A, get their biggest piece of business done with Rodgers, and then B, try and get into free agency, you know, really earnestly for the first time. You know, I think the things that he brings will benefit them and cause or just make things a little bit easier than if they had to bring in a brand new face for that position.
It'll be you know, there, you're right. There's a reason why they created a spot for Russ Ball to and not have to report to the general manager. I mean, he's an important guy, and I think this is, you're right, this is his time. He basically goes into hibernation until training camp starts because of all the contracts he's got to do, of all the finagling. And then, you know, during the fall, that's when he's balancing and looking at the future of how their cap situation's going to be. So, you know, he'll be an important person over the next 2 months for sure.
So, you know, now let's take a look at the draft a little bit itself, and you know, the combine, which, you know, it seems like the players all sort of steal the focus down there in terms of the prospect and what's on television. But a lot of the things we just talked about, you know, those are the things that are getting done at the combine as well. So it definitely is a week that serves many different purposes. But in terms of the draft itself and the prospects, the Packers have a dozen picks this year. If they pick all 12, it'll be their most since I think it was 2006. I can't remember exactly which year it was, but if they actually make 12 picks, it'll be their most since you know, at least 10 years. And you know, one of the ideas that you kicked out there today was the idea that they could potentially look for a bit of an obscure selection, perhaps, with their first round pick or near the top of the first round. What did you sort of surmise there, and why is this particular player somebody that people are paying attention to?
Well, I sort of used him as an example of a direction they could go, and that I think they probably will go in the draft. It might not wind up being him, but a very intriguing guy is Quentin Nelson, guard from Notre Dame. He's really an up-and-coming guy, monstrous, dominant player in college. 6'2", or I'm sorry, 6'5", 325, you know, 32 inch arms and 83 inch wingspan, and benched 225, 35 times. Excellent pass blocker, great run blocker. It's one of those guys who, you know, can make a good offensive line great. And the thing about it, though, is that guards are traditionally not picked in the top 10, hardly even in the top 15. I went back 10 years. There were two guys picked in the 13 draft who went number 7 and number 10. Jonathan, got his name,
Cooper?
escapes me, Cooper. And I'm kind of a tired.
Chance Warmack?
Chance Warmack. So, you know, both of those guys, one went 7, Cooper went 7, Warmack went 10, and basically they were both busts. And you just do not see guards being, people do not value guards that great. Now, that is a conundrum because with this guy, he's got a ton of talent. He's, you know, could be as good as Zach Martin or David DeCastro. But of course, neither of those guys were picked up that high either. It's a not out of the realm of possibility that some teams, it's a very deep year for interior offensive linemen. And so while you know people are saying, "Oh, this guy's a top five pick," you know, no question, he's just a can't miss prospect. I can also see that people saying, "Well, you know, it's kind of a deep year, and we need a quarterback, or we need a wide receiver, or we need the defensive end, and we can get a guard later on." And for the Packers, I think this guy could be transformational because if they have to be thinking about protecting Rodgers for the future. I mean, they have to, as he gets older, they have to start thinking about putting a wall in front of him so that he's running less, so they get hits, so he gets hit less, so that they don't run into a situation like they did last year. And so I have a strong feeling, and plus I've been, you know, I was told this by at least one agent that, you know, they've been really, Gutekunst has really been following offensive line around, paying a lot of attention to the offensive line. Is that they're gonna, I think they're gonna pick a guard, or it could be a tackle, but I think it'll be a guard, you know, in the first, second, or third round. And I think that's a really good idea because if you want to protect Rodgers, that's the franchise. And, you know, there's a lot you can do with a really good offensive line. And they already have the makings of it with, you know, they got the left side all set with Bakhtiari, Lane Taylor, and then Corey Linsley. And they just got to get the right side set. But, you know, you had a guy like this, and that could really improve your offense. So I don't know. I just have this feeling that we're going to see them take a guard, and I don't know if Quentin Nelson will be there, but if he slides to number 10 or something like that, Gutekunst has 12 picks. You know, he could move up and get a guy like this, and it really could make a huge difference for their offense.
Yeah, and so you talk about the right side of the line, and let's just sort of go through some of the options that they have on the roster right now, or at least sort of in the picture right now. And, you know, Jarry Evans, who played right guard all season, is still trying to decide whether or not he wants to even play another
And we
season.
don't know that the Packers even want him back. You know,
Exactly.
that's an issue as well. I think that's one of those things you slow play.
Yep.
And if later on, if you think you need him, then you contact him. But that's not a guy they're going to try to re-sign right away.
No, absolutely not. And he'll be 35 in August, which, you know, is certainly up there. And he even admitted himself that there were signs of decline in some of the things he was doing this season, like, you know, trying to get out on screens. It looked like he was, you know, trying to run with a car strapped to his back at times. And so, you know, that's not necessarily a position that they're solid at. And then you look at some of the other options they have at right tackle. Of course, if Brian Bulaga was healthy, he would be there, but with him recovering from another torn ACL, it's probably going to be a race to see if he can get ready for the start of the season. And then, as you mentioned in your column, the other two options would be former second round pick Jason Spriggs and former sixth round pick Kyle Murphy. And both those guys are coming off significant injuries. So I think, like, you know, in terms of number of bodies, they've got options, but it's just there's not a lot of solid options right now, or at least predictable options based on, you know, what guys are going to be like coming off injury.
Yeah, and think about it. If you get a starting guard out of the draft, all of a sudden then your backups are Jordan McRae, who got a ton of playing time last year, Kyle Murphy, you know, you assume that he'll be healthy enough to at least be a backup. Either Spriggs or Bulaga, you don't know how that'll shape up, but all of a sudden you've got depth, and you not only have depth, but you have talent up front. And so that's a good place to be really good. I think you can make major offensive improvements without having to add big playmakers. I think having an offensive line and then having the running backs that they have, not to mention protecting Rodgers, that can go a long way.
And so then what do you do with the other side of the ball? You know, there's people that are going to say, you know, even if this guy falls, how can they not take the best pass rusher? Or how can they not take the best corner? You know, the other side of the ball is a disaster. And so that sort of leads into some of what Mike McCarthy said in his media session, you know, to kick off Wednesday at the combine. And, you know, he kept referring to the defense, saying that, you know, how long can they be the stepchild of this team? You know, they have to make it at least comparable in terms of what they're producing versus what Aaron Rodgers and the offense are producing. So, what sort of is the argument for just saying, look, maybe there's a very good offensive player there at the top, whether it's, the player we just discussed, or maybe it's a skill player, like if Calvin Ridley falls, a receiver. Is there an argument to just say, look, we absolutely need somebody to rush the passer. We just have to go that way.
No, there isn't. What you need to do at number 14, since they haven't picked that high in quite a while, since what, 2009,
Yeah, BJ Raji.
when they took Raji, is you need to get an impact player. You haven't picked that high in so long, and it doesn't matter where. It just needs to be someone who can make a Pro Bowl. And you go with the guy who you think has the best chance to do that. And other than if it's a quarterback, that's the one position you don't need. But you just take the best player, and you find out, if it's close, then you go with the need. But they just need really good players. They need Pro Bowl players. They don't have enough impact guys. And whether it's a wide receiver or a tight end or an offensive lineman, it doesn't matter. Just get somebody who can really play and who will play and be good next season.
Okay, so let me throw one scenario at you just for the sake of argument. Our colleague Ryan Wood wrote about how the large number of quarterbacks that are expected to go in the first round, if all of them go before the Packers pick, then certainly that benefits them in one regard because better players at other positions will get shuffled down. The flip side of a number of quarterbacks being projected very highly is that somebody could slip. What if one of these really, really good quarterbacks is available at 14 and that's the best player available?
I don't think I would go in that direction. I don't think anyone is as good as a pro any of those guys are the prospect that Aaron Rodgers was when they took him 24th, and when he slipped all the way down. I don't think these guys are Pro Bowl certainties. I'm not even sure that they're all starting certainties. And while they absolutely do need to address the quarterback position, I think that would be a big mistake to take one of those guys. It's not, when they took Rodgers, they were talking about a guy who, in most evaluations, was a top two pick,
Right.
and circumstances led that nobody needed him. And once, the 49ers went with Alex Smith, he just kept dropping. So I don't see that as a similar situation. I would think that, to me, that would be a wasted pick if they went that direction.
I agree. I agree. One of the areas that definitely needs to be addressed, as you just mentioned, is the quarterback position, whether they bring in a veteran through free agency or whether they draft somebody later on. But at some point between now and the start of training camp, they need to address that position, obviously outside of using it the number 14 pick on a quarterback. And again this week, and the second time now, Mike McCarthy has sort of kind of danced around this idea of Brett Hundley not being prepared to play, and then when he's pressed on it, he won't exactly say what it means. And having heard it two times now and sort of thought about it a little bit, I'm kind of taking that to mean that they were not necessarily pleased with how Hundley had prepared himself, and that they were kind of maybe surprised or shocked at the distance that needed to be the ground that needed to be made up between the time Rodgers got hurt and the end of the season. What's your interpretation of that comment that McCarthy's made a couple times now?
I see that as accurate. I think they feel that Hundley was just not in a starter's frame of mind, and that he had spent so much time as a backup and being injured, never getting a chance to really play all that much, that he was just not mentally prepared for what it was going to be like to be a starter. Now, I also think that's a knock on the staff as well, because that's their job to make sure he is mentally and to judge whether he
Right.
is mentally prepared. And, you know, I don't think that he's calling out Alex Van Pelt for that. You know, they didn't fire Alex Van Pelt. He pretty much had determined he wanted to go get a coordinator's job, and it didn't happen, and so he left. I think that, geez, there's a siren coming by. It sounds like there's
I can
a
hear that.
major fire going on. I'm okay, everyone. Don't worry about it. Anyway, I think that, you know, I think it's a little bit of both. I think it's a knock on Hundley, and then I think it's a knock on the staff for not getting him ready, and which McCarthy has to take some responsibility for that as well.
No question. And so now the question becomes, how do they address it? Like I said, they have plenty of picks where they could certainly use one in the middle of the draft, if there's somebody that they like. And who knows, maybe there's somebody in the market, that they determine that they like. I'm trying to pull up some of the quarterbacks here that'll be
Yeah.
free
Well,
agents.
to me, this is going to be a really interesting spotlight on whether Gutekunst and McCarthy differ on Hundley. We know that
That's a
Mike
good point.
McCarthy loves Brett Hundley. I mean, he just loves Brett Hundley. I'm not sure why. You know, he's enamored with him, I guess.
Maybe it's his
And
smile.
I don't know. Maybe it's the gum. And but what I want to see is if Gutekunst is like, you know, forget that. I'm protecting us. I'm getting us. You know, I'm drafting a quarterback, and maybe I'm drafting two quarterbacks, and I'm creating some competition here. Or, you know, maybe I am signing a guy. I want to see if that's one area where they differ in opinion. And if they do, this is where Gutekunst has to flex his muscles, because he's in charge of the 53.
No
And
question.
so he, you know, I want to see if he goes out and uses a relatively decent pick to pick a quarterback.
It's also, sort of extrapolating out what you just said, it could potentially be a situation where the power structure creates a scenario where Mark Murphy has to play referee, and that's sort of
Maybe.
what you had written about, and I think our colleague Pete Doherty had written sort of about as well, just the idea that now you have two people that can go to Murphy and say, well, this guy is XYZ, and then he leaves, and then the other guy walks in the office and said, well, I just can't believe. And so all of a sudden Murphy is the decision maker, but Murphy has said that Gutekunst has that control over the 53, like you said. And so it could be a situation definitely where the differing opinions between head coach and GM become very, very clear. Oh, go ahead. I'm
Well,
sorry, Tom.
yeah, just, you know, that's okay. The last thing I was just going to say about that is I think if Gutekunst takes a quarterback, you know, McCarthy, you know, could feel like, oh, that's unnecessary. We don't need it. We got Hundley. But you get a quarterback in camp who, you know, the personnel people feel strongly about, and McCarthy all of a sudden finds out is as good as they think he is. All of a sudden McCarthy will change his opinion
All is
really
forgotten.
fast.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, this is so true with personnel. You know, coaches, ah, I don't want that guy, you know, I don't want that. And then all of a sudden he's good, and they're like, oh yeah, let's, you know, great decision. I'm glad you did, you know, glad I thought of that. So I think, you know, that's why Gutekunst, that's why personnel guys have to do what they believe in and think about the long term welfare of the organization and not just, you know, what the coach wants.
Absolutely. And another guy that sort of could be lumped into that discussion, but in a different way and to a lesser degree, is Ty Montgomery, in that, where does he really fit? And if, personally, I don't know where he fits. I don't know the answer to that.
I think we saw the answer. I think we heard the answer from McCarthy, and Gutekunst, and particularly from McCarthy, who was basically said, we can't trust him because he's been hurt every single year.
Every
And
year.
I mean, he didn't say that we can't trust him, but he said, we're going to play him everywhere, which is the complete opposite of what he said last year. He's a running back. He's a running back. Remember how many times did we hear him say he's a running back? He's not a running back anymore. He's wherever they need him. He's going to play all kinds of roles now. So that's completely changed, and I believe that they won't have confidence in him or where he's going to play until they see him on the field.
Exactly. Seeing him on the field is the big issue. And look, I am a believer that Ty Montgomery's skill set can be applicable in the NFL. I don't doubt that at all. I mean,
Oh, he's a stud.
we've seen him block punts. You know what I mean? And so he can play. It's just, at what point can you not continue to, and again, I'm not suggesting they cut him. I'm just asking, how long can you keep going giving a roster spot to a guy that chances are, or at least history dictates, that he will be on IR by the middle of October?
Well, that's interesting because Gutekunst talked about that a little bit, and it's at what point do you say that's it? I mean, you've been a prospect for this long, and when do you make that decision that okay, that's as far as we're going to go. We can do better. And we were kind of talking about that in regard to the bottom part of the roster, where, last year they didn't make very many moves, and I was kind of questioning him about that. And he said it's really he, so he started talking about how they have to make this decision of when are there no more diminishing returns on a guy, and that will be a decision they'll have to make in this camp. But for them right now, Montgomery doesn't cost them that much, so it's not that big a deal. The potential there is still great. They don't have very many athletes like him. But he may just be a guy who's so tightly wound that he always gets hurt. And maybe he becomes Jeff Janis next year. Maybe he's their Jeff Janis. He's a darn good special teams player. And if he actually spent a lot of time doing it, who knows?
The only difference really between them, stature wise, they're about the same. Janis, I think, might be an inch or two taller, but weight wise, they're pretty comparable. The only real difference would be top end speed, and that Montgomery, doesn't
Janice is
have the
much faster.
same burst. But no, absolutely. I'm looking at Montgomery's stats here. He played 8 games as a rookie before he ended up on IR. He did play 15 games his second season, but part
He
of
was
that was at
banged up.
receiver, part was at running back. So he didn't, he never endured the full pounding of the running back position. And then last year he played six, and it was a wrist injury that landed him on IR, but he also had the broken ribs. And so it's a tough situation for a guy that, if you asked him, if you lined everybody up and it was recess and you were picking a guy to play any sport imaginable, you just look at him and he's the first guy you pick, and so it's
Absolutely.
tough. I think we'll probably save a discussion of guys who are going to be free agents for maybe later when we get closer to free agency. But is there anything else from the last day or two that you want to touch on before we wrap this one up?
I have almost no brain cells left, and so if I do touch on something, I might say something really stupid or more stupider than I already have. So I'm going to end it right there.
All right, sounds good. Well, we thank you guys all for listening to another episode of the Packers Podcast. We'll be back sporadically throughout the spring with free agency and the draft and things like that. But we'll try and give you a heads up when the next one comes around. And so in the meantime, be sure to check out all the coverage from Tom, Ryan, and Aaron, who are at the Combine this week, on JS Online and PackersNews.com. We hope you guys have a great weekend, and we will talk to you soon.